James.
We're back. Afternoon.
Yeah, we're back. We usually record these in the morning.
In the morning.
It is the afternoon.
We usually record them a little closer to the beginning of the month.
Yeah.
But obviously outside of our control, why we had to kind of push it back. Everybody's good. Everybody's healthy. But I guess we'll start by saying, you know, happy holidays. It's getting closer to Christmas. And we're going to kind of go through November, a little bit of December, maybe touch on. Lots changed in 6-7 weeks, and we'll try to touch on as much as we can.
Yeah. Well, and again, to your point, some delay with the circumstances out of our control. Here we are deep into the following month. You know, you're expecting this to be November. And I think what we're going to do today is go ahead and blend a little bit of November and December together because things change every day.
Yeah.
And so the market's moving quick these days. So appreciate everyone spending a little time with us. This is important business.
Well, and let's just kind of start off how we normally start and look at November.
Okay.
You know, and how that sort of looked. I know we're farther from it now.
Looked awesome.
Yeah.
It looked awesome. You know, the S&P 500 was up 5.7%. You know, bond market was not left out. If you look at the aggregate bond index, it was about 1%, let's say. So, you know, it was an extremely robust month for stocks.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of participation in that. It wasn't this narrow focus. So you had kind of this broadening out. But it wasn't too surprising, considering some of the action that we had during the month of November. So, you know, so.
Well, and I know we had elections and other things going on in November, but did we make any specific portfolio changes because of that?
Yeah, we did. So we did make some moves just notching towards opportunities we saw that came out of any catalyst, quite frankly. The big one here in November was the election.
Right.
And look, we all know how it went. You know, we don't do feelings or emotions here. Mm-hmm. We got ice water pumping through our veins when it comes to managing your money. So clearly the outcome of the election did drive what the chessboard looks like to a degree.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful not to just dive right in, because oftentimes shortly after a catalyst event, such as, you know, as big as the election, right? A lot of the movements that come right after are kind of like a cleanup, if you will.
Yeah.
So a lot of what this election was probably the most hedged election, at least that I've ever seen. And when I say hedged election, what does that really mean? It means that, you know, there's a lot of people buying protection against the market dropping.
Okay.
Okay. So when you put a hedge on, what that typically does is it puts downward pressure on markets, kind of depresses markets, have your catalyst. Well, just like putting the hedges on, push the market lower. When you take them off, it allows the market to bounce, and not really much has to happen there from a perspective of like economic growth. It's simply a function of the machine.
Yeah.
But remember, we've got a multi-factor approach that actually takes into account the machine. So the movements that we made in the portfolio were quick, articulate, but minor.
I was going to say subtle, right?
But subtleties.
Important. But subtle.
Subtle, yeah. So we did make some moves. What we were trying to do is play on a strong dollar, look for opportunities within kind of the U.S. domestic economy. You know, think about tariffs might be a word we're going to have to get used to, and we'll see this. We'll talk about it a little later in the podcast. But there's some things that would play out into that. So, yeah, you saw some movement, and that just lets you know we're not asleep at the wheel.
So if we look at the kind of post-election atmosphere, and we won't look long-term, but look short-term, right? Maybe right after. You mentioned hedging, some of those other things. You know, why did the market maybe react the way that it did?
Yeah. So again, it's just, it was the most hedged event that you could have seen. And all you, markets hate uncertainty.
Right.
Recognize that. Great thing to always remember. And what is this election? You know, two parties go in and, you know, we get this vote and then something comes. So again, it's the uncertainty that's involved with it. So coming into that environment, not that people necessarily, not that investors really want to sell their risk positions or anything, but they hedge them. They dampen them down. They take the sharp edges off of them. And so again, out the other end of that, the catalyst is gone. Doesn't matter who won, quite frankly, in that respect.
Right.
It's just, we don't need this hedge anymore.
Yeah.
And when you take that off through the mechanism of the machine, you see that markets lift. But then again, here's where then we play a little bit of opportunistic ball. We'll go in and say, well, the things that are going to lift harder are the ones that probably play out well in the upcoming environment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the real move yet.
Yeah.
It's not the real move yet. Mm-hmm. This is just, again, a machine characteristic. It's not the real market.
Right. Well, we've had a couple good years, you know, in the market consecutively here, and we've touched on some of that post-election movement. I think our clients are going to be interested. You know, you keep hearing all these all-time highs. We keep hitting all-time highs, and is it a good time to get invested if you're not invested, or, you know, should we be maybe taking some risk off the table? And so, you know, we talked about the post-election move, but have we seen the real movement yet, or is there, you know, whether that's to the upside or to the downside?
Right? No, and so again, it's this idea that what's happening is the chessboard is changing a little bit. And, you know, one thing I keep referencing the game of chess is because it's not something that happens quick.
Yeah.
You know, it's a long strategic game. And so you're trying to anticipate, you know, those longer term moves. And so, Derek, you bring up a great point. You know, those who are thrilled with the election outcome, all of a sudden emotions get involved. And those who are you know, dissatisfied with it, guess what? That's an emotion too. We've been taking a lot of these phone calls. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is the ones who are so excited and overjoyed, they may risk chasing something.
Yeah.
And those who are so upset, they might run from something that they didn't need to because it's an emotional decision. But I guess where this all leads us to is right now is not the time to make that decision that I'm going to push it all in. It has to be part of a strategy, of a system. So, you know, look it, we're here into the month of December. We're catching volatility all over the place right now, okay?
Yeah.
You saw November, one of the best months in history for the S&P 500. What would you expect if you stretch a rubber band up, right? And then if you let it go, it's going to snap back. Like, when you get these big moves up, gravity in physics will catch up with you. So we're catching a lot of volatility. Now, we're recording this, and it's after the Federal Reserve did a 25 basis point cut in the month of December now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Market didn't like it. The market is claiming that the Fed pivoted. Maybe they talked about that's probably the last interest rate decrease. Till the data would warrant different, and they're a little bit nervous about the data. But when you really get to the characteristics of what the Fed said, it's just a headline that the market is using to kind of drop things. Now, I will say the other thing that we're up against here is a government shutdown, perhaps. Congress is having a hard time passing a continuing resolution to keep the government open. I think that's more the concern. And here's the irony in it all. What it's doing is pulling forward an environment that we would have talked with you about as we get into next year.
Right.
And it's in the political arena, there's just going to be a lot of change and a lot of fits.
It's arena. That's why it happens.
Right. So I think what you're seeing is that those concerns, which you would have kind of expected after the inauguration and stuff, they're being pulled forward. That's where you're catching the volatility. But you know what's funny about the volatility? It's uneasy, it's unnerving, but it really takes us back like 3 weeks.
Right.
I mean, we've done very well this year. And so you would expect that there's probably a little bit of steam to blow off, a little bit of froth. But try to focus on, really, when you think about what the Fed said, they expect inflation to be a little higher over the next 1 year. Great. You love inflation if you own assets. That's, you know, it inflates asset prices, okay? The other thing that they said was that they expect neutral rate to be a little higher than what was anticipated. But you look, relatively speaking, there's still low rates. Yep. So there's nothing that really changed there. I think, again, the focus is in Washington. And so hopefully we can get some working together and we can get this thing solved. So,
Well, again, that's, you know, more on that monetary piece and you know, some of the things that we're kind of focusing on now is really more of that fiscal side of things, right? And understanding the cabinet picks that are taking place and Congress and really controlling what the fiscal policy is going to look like, especially given the outcome of the election being a red wave, and controlling all three parts of Congress here. So, Ryan, is there any cabinet picks that stick out to you as far as, you know, how we're going to be managing portfolios through the beginning of the year into 2025?
And the fact that we're now this far into December, we even know more cabinet picks than we would have.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you're seeing them build out, and they're not your traditional cabinet type picks. Mm-hmm. Remember I said markets hate uncertainty?
Yeah.
Okay, well, what happens when you install non-traditional? There's uncertainty yeah. with what that looks like out the other end. So cabinet pick-wise, I think that also drives this angst amongst Congress what's going to play out in D.C., you know, from a market impacting, perspective. But when you think about the picks, the most important one when it comes to your money, in my opinion here, is the Treasury Secretary nominee. Yeah. And nominee right now, we would expect that they make it through the confirmation. But Scott Bessent, hails from the hedge fund world. He's a true practitioner. You know, a lot of times for the Treasury Secretary role, we end up with, just economists from all walks of life who bring ivory tower theory to application, and that then finds its way into what we see in the market. But oftentimes those people are not very knowledgeable of like boots on the ground because they've typically come from government roles or university roles or something like that. So this is, we've got somebody who's used to the hedge fund world who will now be essentially handling the finances of our country at the direction of the president. When you think about what that will be, you might have some policies that would make more sense, or I guess some movements that might make more sense to the financial markets. But again, we will see more to come on that. But here's one thing that we can definitely tie together. Our old friend Jay Powell will certainly get to know whomever the Treasury Secretary is. And so, you know, those two roles are very critical. And when you think about ways to impact the economy, there are two main ways: monetary policy and fiscal policy. Figure Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve have the monetary policy, and then Scott Bessent and Congress will be running fiscal policy. They want to pull back on that fiscal policy, right? The liquidity that gets pumped out of the government and into the economy, I mean, that's stimulative. So oftentimes what happens is if that pulls back, and we've already heard about cuts and things like that, looking at how we spend money as a nation, well, if that's not augmented and offset with something in that monetary policy world, or perhaps it's, relaxed regulation, perhaps it's tax reform, something like that. But all this talk about reining in government spending and stuff, your portfolio is not going to like it if it's not met with some other form of liquidity or stimulus, if you will. Because after all, the market wants liquidity out in the system. And when you start to pull it back, it gets tough.
Right. And even on that piece of it, I think Trump and Bessent are aligned with some of that U.S. competitiveness. Maybe sharing the same view of any trade imbalances. And so that kind of leads us to some of the levers that they may pull. And I know that we've kind of, heard some of those words before. I think those are a big concern of a lot of our clients, as well, that being tariffs, and how that could impact not only like their portfolios, but, are things going to cost more? And so really kind of breaking down, like, what is a tariff, Ryan? Can it be used for good? How are they going to use it? Yeah. What does that really kind of look like?
Yeah.
Because we're certainly, just based on the last time he was in office, tariff is a word that gets used pretty often.
Well, recognize a lot of those tariffs weren't even rolled back under the Biden administration. So some of those still are in existence. And, tariffs are a tool to get compliance, quite frankly. You use them against your trade partners and stuff. But let's just say since the 1800s, we've kind of gone towards this trade liberalization, if you will. What is that? Well, assume Canada makes bread really good, we make steel really good. Well, we should focus on making steel, they should make the bread, and we'll trade. That's trade liberalization. When you think about what tariffs kind of supports, it's called mercantilism, if you will. Basically, you create barriers to trade, and what that does is it focuses your economy inward. Okay, so now everybody's worried about the idea that things are going to cost more with tariffs. Yes, it is a layer of cost. It is an entry barrier. What it does, though, is creates scarcity to the U.S. economy. The U.S. dollar is like the stock price of the U.S. economy. So if you create scarcity to the U.S. economy, if you create scarcity to any type of asset, why is a Mickey Mantle rookie card worth so much? There's a few of them out there, right? Yeah. So if you create a hurdle to access our economy, it actually makes it like more desirable, if you will, and then our currency should rise. So you do tend to find that tariffs would actually strengthen your currency. Therefore, even if things are a little bit more expensive, it could be offset with that stronger US dollar. So I guess don't just run out and think that, oh my gosh, this is gonna truly cause inflation. An absolute statement like that, because it's not necessarily true. Now, I'm pulling from my undergrad ivory tower thoughts in economics, but I mean, that's the bottom line with tariffs. Here's the way that I think it's gonna work. There's probably gonna be a layered tariff system. So trade partners who are extremely important and who, you know, the relationship is good and reciprocal with, they might have a layer of tariff that somebody who is not quite a great trade partner would have. And so that'll give the administration the ability to kind of put pressure on where they need to and what have you.
So if we start looking ahead, right, and I know we kind of did a combination podcast this time, you know, into December like we are, looking back in November. You know, we're going to circle back early January like we typically do, you know, kind of look back at the year. But, you know, looking back maybe the last few trading days of this year, heading into Christmas, New Year's, into next year, inauguration, you know, what should we look for?
Yeah. So, you know, if we want to talk about how is this current market volatility going to end, all we got to do is get through, you know, is the government going to close or not? And again, what this is doing, we've been through this, I mean, my goodness, maybe four times within the last 12 months, it seems like, we've had to, you know, walk this walk. So if they can get through that, you know, that'll probably calm the markets down. But, you know, I don't know. I think that we need to be a little careful as we get into the new year. Remember, markets hate uncertainty. So when you think about all of the non-traditional players that we're seeing being installed, when you think about a non-traditional approach to government, it just emboldens this change. And the market does not always accept change well, even if it's healthy long term. So, you know, the gold standard, quite frankly, would be if we can get the market to grow, our US dollar strong, and positive GDP. That's like the golden goose, if you will. I think there's a vision for it. It has to be executed properly. But in this looking ahead, I think we can get some stability here pretty soon. But as we transcend into 2025, we got to get that guard up.
Right. And that's why you have us, right?
That's right.
All right. Well, we'll see you in maybe just a few weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
Again, glad everybody's good. Glad everyone's healthy. Josh, thank you for coming, as always.
Merry Christmas,
and, everyone. We'll talk to everyone soon.
Merry Christmas.
Advanced Capital Management Incorporated is a registered investment advisor. Information presented on this program is believed to be factual and up to date, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, and it should not be regarded as complete analysis of the subjects discussed.